spend my time talking about particle physics, only at the end touching on cosmology. The reason I want to do this, there's method in this madness, because I think that if people are going to spend a lot of time looking at particle cosmology, theoretical particle cosmology, they really ought to be working in venues and theories that are realistic and actually contain quarks and leptons and look like the standard model. Otherwise, as far as I'm concerned, you're looking at models but not really approaching the real world. So that within heterotic string theory, there are now models that are the MSSM, the minimal supersymmetric standard model, and then contain moduli, which potentially are just pregnant with cosmological meaning, one form or another. And so I want to discuss these models here at some length. Not sure how this works, the yellow one here. So this is work done, the class of models is called the heterotic standard model. This work done with Volker Braun, Yang-Hui He, and Tony Pantev. These are people at Penn and myself. Tony Pantev is a mathematician. This work comes out of the math physics group at Penn. So this is done within the context of the heterotic string, and in particular the E8 cross E8 heterotic string. So one has a string moving in time. However, this lives in a background. This worldsheet lives in a background involving a metric. It also involves a gauge field, which is important in this issue, which is indexed by the adjoint representation of E8 cross E8. So this is the gauge group that one starts off with in 10-dimensional space. There's two E8s. One of them corresponds to the world in which we live, and the other one is a hidden sector. So I will discuss both the observable and the hidden sector. So the way these models come about is that you take this theory, which is 10-dimensional, and you compactify it on a 6-dimensional background down to 4 dimensions, trying to preserve n equals 1 supersymmetry. In order to do that, you're going to have to compactify in a so-called Kolobi-Yau manifold X. So it's a 3-dimensional complex space. And we're going to choose it to have holes in it. And the holes are going to be precisely Z3 cross V3. That is, the first homotopy group is non-trivial and is chosen to be Z3 cross V3. That is the minimal homotopy that one can use in order to get the standard model. Now, on top of this, this is the gravitational part. You have to put a gauge field part. And even though it's hidden in the haze here, I'll just tell you, you have to put a gauge field here, which is contained inside of a vector bundle V. And we will choose the structure group of the vector bundle. That is, we will choose the indexing of the gauge field to be in SU4. Additionally, we will add a Wilson line, which is a bundle which vanishes everywhere but has non-trivial holonomy, and we will assume that it has the full Z3 cross Z3 holonomy. So why does one do this? Well, first of all, the E8 will be spontaneously broken by the gauge field background carrying the SU4 index down to spin 10. Now, you don't have to do spin 10. We can also do these models through SU5, but I won't discuss them here. We use spin 10 because naturally it'll contain right-handed neutrinos, which are necessary in order to account for the masses of neutrinos in supersymmetric models. Spin 10, however, is then spontaneously broken by the Wilson line, the Z3 cross E3, down to the standard model gauge group. But since this is an abelian group, it preserves the rank. You get an extra U1 V minus L symmetry. That extra symmetry is very helpful in preventing nucleon decay, so that you get highly suppressed nucleon decay, which is a good thing. So that's the background group theory. But what is important is the spectrum. Until recently, we didn't know how to compute the spectrum here. The mathematics here is not simple. But we can now compute it, and let me just give you the result. First of all, the low-energy spectrum, the zero modes, are in fact 3 families of quarks and leptons. And each family has the usual left and right-handed quarks, usual left and right-handed leptons, but also contains a right-handed neutrino. That happens because these are descending from the 16 representation of spin 10, which naturally contains such a thing. And that's why we went through spin 10 to begin with. In addition, we get both Higgs field and Higgs bar fields. And until a week and a half ago, the minimal model that we had two pairs of these Higgs and Higgs bar. The MSSM has one pair of Higgs and Higgs bar. However, a week and a half ago, we found that there was a subclass of our models that actually simply has one pair of Higgs and Higgs bar, and that is precisely the spectrum of the MSSM. I won't discuss that new model here because I haven't had time to compute the number of moduli, so I will continue to discuss the two Higgs-Higgs bar model. These are also very interesting, and potentially these things can be observed at the LHC at CERN. But in any case, we do have one Higgs-Higgs bar models now, which are very beautiful and precisely the MSSM. In all cases, we have no other matter at all. There is no exotic matter, either vector-like pairs. They just don't exist. We're not assuming they become heavy because usually they do not. We don't have any other exotic matter at all. We don't have any matter that has quantum numbers different than the standard model. We have no exotic matter. We just have the MSSM. Of course, it's string theory, so you're going to have some moduli. We get six geometric moduli coming from the Calabi-Yau. And in this model, we have 19 vector bundle moduli. In the case of the strict MSSM, we have fewer than 10, but we haven't computed the number yet. That's right. Yeah, it'll be broken up above the electroweak scale. But we also have these models now without that. That really is the main point that I want to make to you, that if one were to do cosmology within this context, and I will show you how one can go about doing that, you're really dealing with the real world here. So if you can show that either inflation or Big Bang, Big Crunch, or ekpyrotic cosmology or something new happens, you're showing that it happens in the real world and not in toy models. Now, as I said, there is more to life than just the observable sector. Heterotic models, these type of heterotic models, also have a hidden sector. And here we find that there are two possibilities. The first one is in the strong coupling string limit, or in the M-theory limit, or the Hojava-Witten limit. And in this case, it goes as follows. We have the observable sector that I just discussed, which lives over on one side of the universe. But then there's a hidden sector. And in the hidden sector, we find that you have to provide a gauge field, a non-vanishing gauge field background here. If you don't, it's not anomaly free. So you need to have such a thing. And the minimal case, we simply choose a gauge field that has an SU2 structure group on it. The simplest thing is not to take a Wilson line there, so we won't. And if you do that, then you find in the hidden sector, you get an E7 gauge group. You have no matter at all, so there's no hidden matter. And the number of moduli is small. You get 5 moduli living over there. However, to preserve anomaly freedom, it turns out that you must have a 5-grain in the theory, which is wrapped on a holomorphic curve, an effective curve. And this will live somewhere in the bulk space. And this is what's really making this strong coupling. In order to make sense of that, you have to have the 11th dimension open up into M theory in order to do this. And in the simplest model, we find that you have the most symmetric gauge group would be U6. We haven't computed the number of moduli. One of them, of course, is just the translation modulus, which is important for cosmology, and we'll get back to it. There's absolutely no other matter involved with that. This U1 to the 6 can be spontaneously broken by moving around in the moduli space of the curve on which this wraps down maximally to U1 to the 6th power or, you know, some lesser breaking pattern. So this kind of thing I've discussed before in cosmology with Justin Curry and Turok and Steinhardt. This was the venue for the original ekpyrotic model where we allowed the 5-grain motion along the 11th dimension to crash into the observable sector and create the Big Bang. However, at that time, we didn't know, we didn't have an observable sector that was the exact MSSM. Now it is, so these things, at least in my mind, become much more important to discuss because they could really be the real world. There is also a weak coupling limit of all of this. In this case, it turns out that you have to take a slightly enlarged structure group for the background gauge field. The minimal one is SU2 cross SU2. And again, we won't put any Wilson line there. And in this case, the theory is anomaly free without having any five brains at all. You just don't need five brains. And the hidden gauge group at low energy is spin 12. And now we get a few matter multiples in the hidden sector. So these will not couple to the real world, but we get two copies of 12 representation of spin 12. And then there's some moduli, which I've never bothered to compute, but there's a handful. And I've shown this separated, but of course you can take these and push them together now. There's no five brain. You can take the weak coupling limit. So this is a vacuum that is good in the weak coupling limit, and you could use it in strong coupling if you wish. And it's precisely this kind of thing without any five brains in it that we used, again, with the same authors and also with Nadi Seiberg to discuss these big crunch, big bang cosmologies where the two ends of the world come together and bounce off of each other. So it's all within the venue, but again, it has, in my opinion, been strengthened by the fact that this is the real world now. I don't know how to overemphasize that. There's so much in my own work included, looking at cosmology from a very toy and, in my opinion, naive point of view as far as particle physics is concerned. We live in the real world with a standard model around us. So, we hear Dick Bond's talk with all this amazing data about the real world. Well, if we're going to try to model this in particle cosmology, we ought to really have a theory of particle physics that's realistic. These theories in heterotic string are realistic. Yes, Lee.
Yeah, given that so 5 to 10, right, you have 25
underlying that
we need to
predict,
then determine the actual
parameters
of the standard model.
Well, yeah.
So,
right, so if you wait, I'll get to this at the end of the talk. I'll discuss that exactly. But there are moduli, that's for sure. Okay, so having said all of that, let me just show you that there are some really beautiful features in particle physics here that are essentially all of the things that we ever wanted to happen in particle physics happen in these heterotic standard models. Let me give you some examples of this. First of all, let's look at the low energy spectrum. How does one compute this? Well, Ed Witten and others showed us a long time ago that what you do is you look at the kernel of the Dirac operator in the background of this vector bundle. And I don't want to go into any of the mathematics, but I want to point out that various groups appear here, various representations of spin 10 appear. You can get the adjoint representation, you get moduli, you get 16s, 16 bars, and 10s of spin 10. Now, what determines how many of those representations do you have? It turns out to be the so-called sheaf cohomology that's associated with those representations. So let me take the 16, for example. The associated sheaf is the bundle V, and you have to find its first cohomology. And this is a mathematical thing, and it's not simple, but we can compute that. Now, both the cohomology and the representation are acted upon by the Z3 cross Z3 group. So not only can one find the cohomology, but you can find the action of this group on the cohomology. The Wilson line also acts on the representations, let's say in this case the 16. And it acts with a Z3 cross Z3 representation. So that's how you go about finding a particle spectrum. So let's ask about some of these things. Let's look at exotic particles. Those have to do with the 16 bars. The number of 16 bars, as stated here, is precisely find this particular, that should be a complex conjugate here, that's the dual bundle. You find precisely this cohomology, you tensor it with a 16, you find the representations of Z3 cross Z3 on each, you take the tensor product, and you choose the invariant subspace. I didn't say that. Once you find that, you take the invariant subspace, and that's what descends to our real world, the rest being projected out. Well, we can choose the bundle V in such a way that nothing here is invariant, and it all gets projected out, so you get no exotic particles whatsoever. That's an extreme case of what we would call doublet-triplet splitting, which I will discuss in a moment. Yes? No, I mean, for each representation, not its difference. This isn't the index we're talking about here. So each representation counts the number of those representations. Yeah. Yes. It's the generic point. It would jump at special points, and I'm staying away from special points. I haven't tried to compute that. It's certain, everything here is the generic point, which is the overwhelming space. But there will be sets of codimension one and higher that could jump, but we haven't computed. We've computed it in other venues with Yang Gui, but not in here. So another thing that occurs here that people have always wanted in particle physics models, which is just very completely natural here, is so-called doublet-triplet splitting. So let's look at the 10 representation. These are the guys that are going to contain the Higgs. The 10 representation comes with the cohomology of not V, but wedge 2 of V, so it's the anti-symmetric product of V. We're supposed to find a Z3 cross Z3 representation on H1, the Wilson line action on 10, and take their tensor product. So you can do this. So for example, if you compute this cohomology, H1, I won't tell you how to do it, but the answer is simple enough. We find that is a 14-dimensional space. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times 2. It's a 14-dimensional space. And this is how the Z3 cross Z3 acts on it. So if you think of this, it's a big diagonal 14 by 14 matrix. Chi 1 is the generator of the first Z3, chi 2 is the generator of the second Z3. On the other hand, it's easy to find the action on the Wilson line. So here's the Higgs. I'm suppressing the U1 charges. Here's the Higgs. Here's a color triplet that goes with the Higgs. Here's a Higgs bar and a color triplet bar. So I'm breaking it up under SU5. There's a 5 and a 5 bar. But here's the Higgs, Higgs bar, and triplet bar. So if we take these actions and tensor it together, it's a 30-second exercise to find the pieces that just have unity here, that are just invariant. And we find that that subspace that's invariant has a Higgs and a Higgs bar, but it comes in two copies in this original model. But in our new models, you only get one copy of Higgs, Higgs bar. So that's the way you get it. But you note that there are no color triplets at all. The color triplets are never invariant. They are just simply projected out. And that is an extremely natural way of having doublet-triplet splitting. But it's not something one builds into these models. It's the way heterotic models work. So it's a very beautiful thing. It's what people always wanted in these kinds of theories. And it just occurs naturally. So an important thing for cosmology are the moduli. And in addition to the geometric moduli, we have vector bundle moduli, because the vector bundle can be warped in various ways, which is energy free. And so how do we find the moduli? Well, they correspond to the one representation, which does not get acted upon by the Wilson line, so it just sits there. So what we have to do is compute H1 of V tensor V dual, which is the adjoint of V, and we have to find its invariant subspace. That's really hard to do. We had a paper this summer, which is unreadable to the rest of the world, but the bottom line is you can do it. But you can guess what you expect to get. Over many years now, we've been computing these moduli spaces, and you always get on the order of 100 or so, 100, 200. One of the problems with heterotic theory is that you get a large number of moduli. However, we're now dividing, we're modding out the Z3 cross Z3, and that essentially means that you're dividing the order 100 by 9. So you expect things of order 10, and that's what we find. We get things of order 10. In our case, when we do this exact calculation, which we carried out this summer, we get 19 copies of this modulus. There are 19 vector bundle moduli in the model with 2 Higgs and Higgs bar. In the model with 1 Higgs and Higgs bar, that is the MSSM, we get fewer than 10. That we know, but we don't know.
Okay, but getting a spectrum is not sufficient.
One has to do particle physics here. And now we have launched into that in the last few months with very promising results, I think. So let's look at some of the interactions that would enter the superpotential here. So the first one would be, for instance, Higgs mu terms. So what's a Higgs mu term? Well, in the superpotential, you would like to find a Higgs-Higgs bar pair. But you can't get a bare term with a constant u in front, because that would give a mass to the Higgs, and these are zero modes. So that's just not going to happen. However, you can get cubic couplings. So it's not at all impossible that one can get a coupling of the vector bundle moduli to the Higgs-Higgs bar. And they'll have some coupling out in front, and that's given by this quantity. What's happening here is that each of these fields actually corresponds to a section of the bundle. So you have to find these sections of the bundle over the Calabi-Yau. They are D bar closed 0-1 forms, and they're just forms on the Calabi-Yau. And you wedge them with the holomorphic freeform on the Calabi-Yau integrate. Now, I'm not saying that that's easy to calculate, but what we can do now is tell you whether it's zero or non-zero. And the way one does that is as follows. It turns out that these triple products are related to the triple intersection of the relevant cohomologies. So we have a modulus and a Higgs and a Higgs bar. So they come from these cohomologies. And these have to map to the complex numbers, which in this case is just H3 of the trivial bundle. That's just the complex numbers. They can't always do that mapping. Some of them just map to zero. So you have to decide if some of them can map to something that's non-zero. And you can do that. That's a mathematical issue, which is in our recent paper, but I will just tell you the results here. We find that there are indeed non-zero cubic couplings of this form. They involve both Higgs and Higgs bar of both of those pairs, both pair 1 and pair 2. However, only 4 out of the 19 vector bundle moduli can couple. There's a text. Yeah.
Doesn't this actually mean the generic side of the generic thing? Since the generic thing's moduli space implies that Higgs bar coupling gives them a mass?
No, it doesn't give them a mass, because what they'll get is they can get an intermediate mass. But that mass, it just violates the sense of the entire construction. If these get a mass, which I'll do in a minute, they will get a mass considerably below that of the Calabi-Yau.
I'm just asking, given that coupling, you probably have an vacuum expectation value of now.
Yeah, it does have a mass, but only after putting in non-perturbative effects that would be below the Planck scale. So at the Planck scale, they have their zero modes. I'm sorry, not the Planck scale, but at the compactification scale. No, but look, any zero modes can have cubic couplings, and they can. These things may or may not get a VEV. We expect them to get a VEV, but the VEV are generated by non-perturbative effects, and just below the electroweak scale, those things would be zero.
There's generic points out there, standing around some point, right? So I'm saying, what your computer is that you move a little bit of model length, it's fine. Give the data mass. The model length is satisfied.
It would have to, for them not to be zero modes, you would have to jump up to the Calabi-Yau scale, which this cannot. So these are in the low energy effective theory. They're zero modes until you put in a low energy effective theory, and then you can get radiative corrections, which drive you to
equilibrium. I agree, they're low energy effective theory, but if I get the mass in that theory, it's calculable, and which is the quadratic.
Well, it does what I say it does, but the calculation makes perfect sense. These start out at zero modes in the effective theory. You can compute all these cubic couplings, and then you can look to see if you spontaneously break these things, and the scale will be less than the Calabi-Yau scale, all of which is consistent. So that's what they're going to do. They will get BEVs, probably will get BEVs, and these will produce mutants. So I don't see any issue there. No, but that's what he's asking. No, it's not string scale. No, it's not string scale, and that's the point. It's not, because these are zero modes, so it makes no sense for the entire theory. You're looking at a zero mode theory, and if you get any radiative corrections with decoupling, these are going to have to be at scales much less than the Calabi-Yau scale. So this could be an electroweak BEV, it could be an intermediate BEV, but it cannot be a Calabi-Yau BEV. It's perfectly consistent from that view. Anyway, it is likely to get a BEV when one computes the entire system, and that would produce mu terms. What the value of that would be, we haven't worked out, but it could be anywhere from zero up to an intermediate scale, which would be maybe 10 to the 12th JEV, but certainly not the Calabi-Yau scale, because that would be an inconsistent calculation. There are Yukawa couplings as well. Those are going to be left to right, but you're going to have an up Higgs and a down Higgs. And again, these coupling parameters are given the same way. You have to find the sections and compute these integrals. But you can decide whether they're zero or not zero by looking at the intersection of the cohomologies that are associated with these. In this case, you have different cohomologies. This corresponds to the 16 and the 16 from whence the left and the right descend. And here's the moduli in the middle. I'm sorry, here's the Higgs in the middle. And I think I did that wrong. This should be the Higgs in here. I'm sorry, that's wedge too big. And in any case, we can compute these, and many of these vanish, but not all of them, and we find that we get non-zero Yukawa couplings here over all three families for both up and down Higgs. One can move around in this model space a little bit and get textures in that mass matrix, and those textures might be phenomenologically very interesting, but we haven't gotten there yet. Then there is the stuff that will eventually lead to cosmology here. It's also related to these other questions. What about scalar potential? Well, you can try to compute, for example, these perturbative moduli couplings, which would be cubic couplings of the moduli. And again, they have these coupling parameters. They come from a triple intersection involving the adjoint of V three times. You have to map them to the complex numbers. And the question is, can you find couplings there? The answer is yes, you find cubic couplings. And this coupling parameter here, however, allows only those first four moduli to couple to all the other 19 moduli. So two of them can be 19 moduli, but the last one can only be four, for whatever that may mean, at least in this specific model. So you get some texture occurring there. And there is a reason for this. There is an internal quantum numbers that are occurring in these theories, which are a little hard to describe in a talk like this. They're due to array spectral sequences that we use. and those moduli, those selection rules determine the structure to some extent. So let me just quickly run through the rest of this and go on to the little cosmology at the end. You can also compute non-perturbative moduli couplings. You can take a string whirl sheet and wrap it around holomorphic curves in the Calabi-Yau. We showed a long time ago, based on work of Witten and Beasley, that you will get potentials, non-perturbative potentials here. There's a Pfaffian, so-called Pfaffian out in front. That turns out to be a homogeneous polynomial of these 19 moduli. The degree of the polynomial n depends on which curve you wrap around. So that's another source. The gauge fields on the hidden sector are sufficiently large, E7 or spin 12, that you can get Gaugino condensation at a high enough scale to break supersymmetry in a nice way, spontaneously. This produces its own addition of the superpotential. C, D, and E are constants, which we know. And this will involve, for example, the dilaton, the separation modulus between the end of the world grains, and also the five-grain modulus Y, and so on. And then we put this stuff together. So this is the issue people have been asking about, and this is where the cosmology begins. You might ask yourself, what is the potential energy of all of these things? So what we find, what we have proven, at least at the level of the Stanford work on these kinds of things, which is numbers of equations and numbers of unknowns, is that we can stabilize all of the moduli in the theory, but with a negative cosmological constant. It seeks n equal 1 supersymmetry, and it finds it. So that's nice, that you can potentially stabilize as a stable vacuum for all moduli. However, it's got a negative cosmological constant. There has been other work on this recently by Evgeny Buchbinder, where he adds anti-five grains to this mix. And or you can look at anomalous U1s in the theory. So where would anomalous U1 come from? Well, it's possible to adjust the hidden sector so that it contains a U1 factor. That's easy to do. Or you can spontaneously break the U6 so it contains at least one U1 factor, and that you can adjust things so that one of these is anomalous. And if that's the case, then you can lift this negative thing, a la the Stanford group, up to a positive cosmological constant, which is some kind of quasi-stable vacuum, because at least at the moment it can roll out to the right, for example, and it will have a positive cosmological constant. However, this is really where the cosmology message begins. There will be one more transparency only. Is that this is a very multidimensional space. And so you have to ask yourself, well, what's really going on here? This was just a toy I wrote here just to show you that you can lift this. But actually, you can go in various different directions. And when we do that, at least preliminarily, we discover all kinds of interesting cosmology that can happen here. So for example, you can move in directions which basically are in the direction of the modulus of the five grain, in which you can have a negative dip in the potential, which then goes over a barrier and gets itself stuck in the minimum. Now, we actually did it when this was at zero, not with a positive cosmological constant, but I see no reason why that can't be lifted. So this is a possibility, and that could be perfect big crunch, big bang physics. This was recently done by these people, Borisov being my student at Penn. And Evgeny Buchbinder also showed that looking in other directions, you had results that looked very similar to the Stanford group, that you could get very flat directions running out in other directions that would roll down into that minimum and probably inflate. So the bottom line of all of this is that we have this spectacular spectrum
compute your Kawa couplings, we can compute new terms. In principle, and more than in principle, I think we can compute the superpotential for all of the moduli. And then the question is, what cosmological implications would that have? Is inflation lurking in there? Is ekpyrotic theory lurking in there? It seems to me that one can actually begin to study these things at a fundamental level at this point. And if one gets results, whatever they may be, it will be in a venue where you really do have the real world living in an observable setting. Thank you.
I think we have a question over there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, first of all, I haven't done that. I'm just pointing out that this had been done by somebody. I don't know. It will certainly give you explicit supersymmetry breaking, and it changes a lot of things. So the anomalous U1 seems to me to be the way to go here. But in any case, that's all I know.
Currents as well.
Yeah, that's not as simple as you think. So are the colors coming proportional? It's a complicated question of which I don't think anybody knows the answers yet. I can only tell you that Paul Langacker looked very carefully at these things when these results first came out. And his conclusions were that when you have only one extra pair of Higgs-Higgs bar, that it was very, very simple to avoid the bounds on flavor changing neutral currents. When you have more of them, it becomes increasingly difficult to do. So that's a very interesting question. I would invert the logic here. It is possible in all cases to suppress this below the experimental bound. So I would go to LHC people and I would say maybe they ought to be looking at Higgs-mediated flavor-changing mutual current bounds and see whether such a thing exists, because that would be an indication of extra Higgs. We also have models without any extra Higgs.
Bert, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I was going to make almost a nasty comment at the beginning, if I can, that the real world is the standard model, not the minimally supersymmetric standard model.
Older generation.
Yes. But the question is, so there are these flavor, I think it's great, but it's so nearer to the real world than any other string theory. I'm sorry, I think it's great that you're nearer to the real world than any other string theorist. So it's not really a criticism, but you're getting so close that you may have to confront these flavor problems that you know.
Yeah, I agree.
If you're really getting to the real world. My question is, in this class of models, do you have, let's say, an upper limit on the proton lifetime? Or have you looked at that?
Yeah, well, you can certainly... We haven't looked at it yet. One has to compute all of the cubic operators, which we haven't done. Then there's the issue of what their coefficients are going to be. There are selection rules, which change from model to model. So in a lot of cases, a lot of nucleon decay operators that would be dangerous get projected out by what used to be called string miracles, I guess. But now, at least in these models, we can see what those miracles are. So there's these selection rules, internal selection rules. So the answer is, we have to decide, my own group and others, if they're going to work on this, which of this very small set of models you want to choose. You can compute all of these decay operators, and you should be able to make estimates as to the size. Having a U1D minus L really helps, but there's also a lot of other stuff that gets projected out because of these selection rules. So I'm not trying to sidestep the question. You're exactly right. We're at a point where, since the spectrum is right, and since we get Yukawas and U-terms, basically, one should start doing real particle physics and confronting the real world, like flavor-changing neutral currents and so on. However, in principle, there's no reason why we should not be successful here. Wow.
Does that have to be relations amongst the standing model parameters or the parameters at the end of the down? And
Yeah. So yes. So if you look at mu terms, for instance, it'll certainly affect mu terms, which affects things. But second of all of these coupling parameters, lambda, have a hidden modulus dependence in them, which is very subtle and which we don't fully understand. If you're looking at a section of a bundle, if you start changing the bundle, then somehow this affects the sections. And so one expects some implicit modular dependence inside of those couplings lambda. So in fact, if you want to look at the electron-muon mass ratio or something, these things would probably be modulus dependent, in which case the value of the moduli minimum is essential. So one has to, in fact, discuss that minimum and how to minimize it exactly. And I just gave you some preliminary comments.
So can I ask a question for the probably very far future? Have you got any plans to look at more general manifolds of SU3 structure? And the reason I'm asking that is it's another way to generate potentials in these models, which might be interesting for either stabilization or cosmology.
More general manifolds?
Of SU3 structures, so something with intrinsic torsion, maybe a half-lap manifold, something like that.
Well, the problem is that as far as we know, and we've certainly tried more than most, I think, at this point, the only manifolds that I know that will produce the MSSM spectrum, if that's our goal, which I guess was our goal, are these.
So you're saying that you have reasons to suspect that any manifold with intrinsic torsion wouldn't give these be capable of giving MSSM spectrum, or just that you haven't?
I don't want to say that. All I want to say is that it was intensely difficult to get the MSSM spectrum.
Sure.
I can't tell you how hard that is. And we know of one way to do it, and that's the way that I was outlining.
Fine.
The minute you move to anything else, there's no guarantee that you will get anywhere close.
The old ideas for explaining why new generations have such small masses compared to the top generation was that in some sense, two of the families should couple only through world genes and not
right.
Which is, in some sense, a classical question about cohomology. You want it to have a lot of mass in
right.
Can you tell in this case whether you have zeros in the.
Yeah, the answer is yes, almost. I just talked with Nima or Kami Hamid about this last week at Harvard. I wish we could get exactly that. What we get, for example, is that we have a texture in which all ups couple and all downs vanish, for example. If we could show that the first two family ups were really tiny, we'd be happy. But, you know, what Nima was saying, if we could just get the top quark couple and everything else zero, he'd be extremely happy. We don't know how to do that yet. But there is, I haven't had time to show it here, but if you look at our recent papers, see, you know, we use the ray spectral sequences pushed down. So what you're always doing is taking the cohomologies and decomposing it into subspaces. Those subspaces really form, that decomposition forms internal quantum numbers. You have to go from space to space. And that puts texture in all of these calculations. And that texture, it'll either be lousy physics or it'll be good physics. Right now, you can give everything Yukawas, but we can also give only the tops, but not the bottom Yukawas. We can have cases where only the bottom family, the light family, couples to the other two, but they don't couple to themselves.
Okay, unfortunately, I think we need a break here for lunch. Let's thank the speaker again.